Today is Sunday, June 4th, which is an auspicious date for me because 67, the war broke out on June 4th, and those next few days changed my eternity, not just my life, June 4th, 2023. My heart is broken. The news already last night brings us back to reality with all the demonstrations, pro and con and con and pro, and yes estate, no estate, and three soldiers killed. And what's even worse, killed on a border that is supposed to be quiet. Two of my own grandsons in recent months spent many hours at the Egyptian border. All right, I hope, but this goes on all the time. It's like with Jordan many years ago when also a Jordanian officer came and killed a whole group of religious girls on a teal. It's beyond words what we go through. Before I go further, there's a gift here. That, please take 1 second. The bottom book and give it to Natan and tell Natan I hope he and his wife enjoy it. It's a book. I don't need it anymore. And I felt, who should I give it to? And all the stories in there are true. I know I've quoted those stories. I'm a scholar. I give sources. He quotes stories and doesn't give sources. But the sources are true. Rav Avraham Pan, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Most of his sources are from the Jewish Observer, what I go to Israel put out for many years. Okay, I want to dedicate today's shiur to the memory of Reb Geshen Edelstein. Gadol b'Yisrael, 100 years old, 80 years of being a Rosh Yeshiva. His life story is fascinating, and I don't know how many of you are aware of it. He was born in Soviet Russia, and the communists had already taken over. His parents did everything possible to keep him and his younger brother Yaakov from going to a Soviet school. They forged the birth certificate, they sent them to an aunt, and his mother died from typhus in Russia. The kids were young. The father, with miracles, got an exit visa to Israel, reclaimed his two sons from family, and they came in Aliyah. And he became the Rav, a Litvisha Rav of Hoda Sharon. That's a suburb beyond North Tel Aviv. Not too many religious Jews there, but those Jews needed a Rav. They still had feeling. The fourth generation today doesn't have that feeling. And that's where their father remained. That's where his brother Yaakov was Rav. Now, that had a very interesting effect on the two boys because they were Haredim. And yet, to a certain degree, their outlook was exactly like a YU graduate as far as a Kiruv Rechokim, not forcing anyone out if they go off the derech. They had a very basic understanding of the Israeli society. And in all the eulogies that have come up, this is stressed time and again. And you have to credit it to where they grew up. As a matter of fact, they didn't even go to a regular school because there wasn't a Mamlachti Dati school in the area at the time. Their father home-tutored them, hired special rabbeim or teachers for mathematics and English. It was the British protectorate then, so they also knew English quite well and had to know English. And when Panovich was established, and again, Time moves on. It's a reality of life. Rabbi Miller was discussing with me, Reb David, a number of weeks ago, and he was upset over something, the attitude of the students today in Gris Kollel here. And I told him, it can't be helped. Time moves on. They relate to a different generation. And that's the reality. In my life, I've told you so many times, with these 10 fingers, my wife and I built Beth Ephraim. If you'd go back to Beth Ephraim, make a Jewish center today, and say, who was Aaron Rekel, Ani Rothkopf, Aaron Rekel, Aaron Rothkopf, we'll use that name. No one will even know. Time moves on. It's 60 plus years later. which is understandable. But I just want to tell you something very important you should know. The Torah in Israel before the modern movement was all from the Yeshiva Yashan. In Yerushalayim, Petach Tikva, in Tzfat you had Hasidus. There was a more Kabbalistic overtone. When Petach Tikva Yeshiva, established Rav Yechiel Michal Gordon, the Lam Shoresh Yeshiva, established a branch here, it was the most famous literacy yeshiva. The 30s into the 40s, I mean, today it's hard to believe, but the Petach Tikva Yeshiva, Rechiel Michal Epstein, Rav Reuven Katz, Rosh Yeshiva was the Rav HaRashi of Petach Tikva, was Alitvish and Talmud Chacham, that was the top yeshiva. In Petach Tikva, there was a young man who had come over from Litter in the late 30s, saved his life, Rav Shmuel Rizovsky. He was a Talmud Muvhak of Rav Shimon Shkop. And it was Rav Shmuel Rizovsky, the name is not widely known today, in Panovich it's known. He brought over the Litvish Derech of Learning to Israel, to Palestine, and then to Israel. When Rav Kahaneman established Panovich, he took Rav Shmuel Rizovsky out of Petach Tikva and brought him to Panovich. He was the first Rosh Yeshiva. The school began with 6 students, Panovich. So Rav Kahaneman knew the Edelstein brothers' father from Europe, the same world, and he said, send your sons to me. And that's how Rav Yaakov and Rav Geshen, I should say Rav Geshen was older, Rav Geshen and Rav Yaakov, these two teenage kids became Talmidim of Mufakim of Rav Shmuel Rizovsky. And that's the whole story. Now, with Rav Shmuel Rizovsky, it's like a movie. If anyone, he married Big Yichus. He married the Tzvi Pesach Frank's daughter. Somehow, whatever the reasons, I can explain, it's not hard to understand. He was a Litvish, she was raised here, born here. It was apples and oranges. He was a chain smoker. Do I have to elaborate? That tells you something. They later got divorced. He married Bezivik Shani, the aunt of the wife of a Talmud of mine from Baltimore, Dr. Henry Brehm. And Bezivik Shani, he married this lady. Her father was one of the big fighters for Torah in Petach Tikva. My Mechutin, Zichron Levrach, Izzy Ackerman, who lived in Petach Tikva, he and the father of Rav Shmuel Rizovsky's second wife fought the mayor of Petach Tikva to Bori when he wanted to open up theaters on Shabbos in the 1980s. Petach Tikva wasn't that from then. Today, it's a different story, but it's a small world. Now, after he got divorced, he married this lady, Bezivik Shani, and he said, Rav Shmuel Rizovsky, these were the happiest days of my life. Desanant here, Natan. What can we do? Dr. Belkin used to say, Mehabanishta mashkant after Ribbono Shel Olam. None of us have a mortgage under Ribbono. It's a very sharp statement. His second wife died. She died young. Rav Shmuel Rizovsky, from all his chain smoking, lung cancer. He already was very seriously ill. His first wife remarried him to take care of him in his final illness. You follow? It's like a soap opera. But Rav Shmuel Rizovsky, he built Panovich. And his first two Talmidim, who went on to do so much Torah good in Israel, are the Edelstein brothers. The younger one was succeeded his father. I believe his son today is the Rav of Hod HaSharon. It's the third generation already of Edelsteins. And the older brother, 80 years ago, started teaching in Panovich and gave shir the night before he died. Did you see the picture on the websites? That in the hospital room, there's a whole group of Bachram around him, and he gave a 16 and a half minute shir the night before he died. You, You can't top that Ahavat Torah. If I ever want to give a Litvish understanding of what Torah is about, it's that picture of the Shir. So I, with great humility, I bow before the memory of Reb Geshen Edelstein. And there's a beautiful book on his younger brother that was put out by the mayor, by Sivana and her husband Yedidya, a beautiful volume on the younger brother. I highly recommend it. I also want to call attention to two more deaths in our community. And what I'm recalling now really hurts. Chava Tova Fina Nachenberg. Almost 22 years ago, it was in the summer of 22 years ago, people left this building. There was a whole program from, I believe it was the Azrieli Graduate School program. And they all went to Sabaro's to have pizza. And I don't have to tell you, I believe 16 people were killed, over 100 people wounded, and one of the murderers is still alive, kicking. Everyone knows where she lives in Jordan, and they refuse to extradite her to the United States. America wants her. She's on the most wanted list because she killed many Americans, including students of Azrael Graduate School. This lady, a granddaughter of Rabbi Morris Feiner, and see here it said, the price we have paid, the Feiners were unbelievably good. Rabbi Morris Feiner's father was a wealthy businessman. I believe he was in the garment industry, 7th Avenue. He was very good to Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. I've mentioned stories over the decades, the good he did for Reb Moshe. And just think for a minute, Reb Moshe's great-grandson is killed in Har Nof in the shul, Moshe Tversky, named after him. A Rav, a Talmud Chacham, a Tzaddik, a Gon, blown away, 5 people killed in the shul. I knew 4 out of the 5. And here Rabbi, Mr. Feiner's great-granddaughter, 22 years she was in a coma and finally died last week, lo aleinu. I also want to mention a father of a Talmud of mine died last week. Rabbi Dr. Robert Blau, Bobby Blau, as we all knew him. And here too is the father of Alan Blau, who was my student, and Howard Blau, who was my student. Could I even taught his sister Joyce. There were 3 children there. And Bobby Blau, you should know, was one of the greatest Talmidim of the Rav out of the 40s, late 40s, I would imagine. He got smicha, let me see, 1954. So it's the late 40s, early 50s. First-rate Talmud Chacham, first-rate mind. Went into the insurance business. Every Rabbinical Council of America member knew him from the insurance business. He worked out very good insurance policies and pension policies for the Rabbanim in their shtelas. Bobby Blau put out a wonderful volume. It's now being reprinted, I understand, a new edition with a lot of corrections. Put out a wonderful volume, Efnevi Eshneh, where he has some of the Rav's classic Sheyurim from that period. He also tells a story that I've often thought about and I've often seen with my own eyes, how the Rav comes out of the building and there's Rabbi Belkin, and by this time he has a chauffeur and a car, a limousine to drive him around. And he sees the Rav and he asks the Rav, where are you going? Oh, I'll give you a lift. And now they start fighting with each other. Who will open the door for who? And this goes on for 2-3 minutes on Amsterdam Avenue. And finally they decide to go around the back. Each one opens the door, the right door, the left door, at the exact moment, and they go in. And that's a story that he perpetuates, that gives us understanding. Okay, now let me go further. It's just a terrible feeling last night. I was stupid. I didn't tell my wife. I figure, why upset her? Let her get a good night's sleep. And then before we went to sleep, I wanted to see the weather. So I turned on to get the weather. When the weather, there was the news, and there it was, three soldiers. All right. I mentioned in class that the Shlomo Zalman Orbach had an English-speaking daughter-in-law. I thought it was Rav Shmuel Orbach's wife. It was not Rav Shmuel's wife. The daughter-in-law of Shlomo Zalman, who was born in England, was married to his son Rav Yaakov. Nevertheless, I understand Rav Shmuel's wife, she grew up here during the British Protectorate, also spoke a very good English, if not a perfect English. Now, and all we've described, and we'll come back to it, with the strawberries. Talmud Jeffrey Rosenfeld writes, but look, things have changed. They use less pesticides. Could be strawberries are more infested. Could be lettuce. Could be the more treif. But yeah, there's no question that we have to take into consideration changes. And we'll come back to that again and again. Nevertheless, we also have to live with a certain concept, which I'll talk about today and next week. Lo nitna Torah l'malchei hasharet. We're only human beings, and Torah has to function within a human configuration. Now, regarding what I mentioned about the contemporary situation, like I just got a call last night Friday from my grandson. The usual shyly you get, I think someone else asked me in this room years ago, when you heat up chicken on Shabbos. I come from a world we never took anything off the blech, we never put anything back on the blech. But who uses a blech today? I threw out. I had a blech. I had two blechs, one for Pesach, one for Aliyah, that I had made here in 1969 when I came in Aliyah. My children all have platters, and before it goes on, they put on solids. What do you do when you have a solid with juice around it? And all right, this is a basic machlokes rishonim. I remember someone maledicting the Rav because he was matir with soup, So, how machlokes? Ein bishul acha bishul. That's on a solid. What about liquid? And, halacha l'mais, ein bishul acha bishul. You buy kugel. You heat the kugel up. You put the kugel in the refrigerator. You take the kugel out. It's the same kugel. But with liquid, you see with your own eyes. Here, you have a soup. Put it in the refrigerator. It's cold. You heat it up. It boils again. It's new. You can see with your... Anyway, so machlekes rishonim. The Rambam and the Sfadik rishonim are more lenient. The Ashkenazic are more machmir. So these are generally the shilas you get. I just sent my grandson. He's a fine Talmud Chacham. So he's the one who wrote the book on the tanks. And there's a whole big thing in June 26th, I think it is, at the Latrun. They're having a whole book launch. And, oh, wow. Kenayin Hara, I guess for them it's real. It's important. Book on tanks. But I sent them printed information. But these are the type of shilas you get today. I don't recall the last time I got a shila on a chicken with a broken leg. You follow me? We get chickens. So Daniel Goodstein wrote to me. He said that this was a real story that Rabbi Rishkin told at Ella Soloveitchik's shiva. Ella Soloveitchik, Ella Shurin, was the wife of... Rabaron Soloveitchik. She was an Isha Gedola. The Gedola Yisrael that I knew, they could never survive the demise of their wives. It's sad, it's life. It's they become literally one unit. V'hayula basar echad. You don't have a better example than Rabaron and Elor, than the Rav and his wife, than the Rav Lubavitcher Rebbe and his wife, Rav Ovadia Yosef and his wife. It's fascinating. Okay, Regarding your discussion of rabbis not really receive shilas about chickens nowadays, I'm reminded of a story Rabbi Soloveitchik, about Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik that Rabbi Riskin told at Ella's Shiva. A woman once came to Rabbi Riskin in New York with a shila about her chicken. He didn't know the answer, so he brought the chicken to Rabbi Aaron's apartment to ask him. While Rabbi Riskin was waiting in the foyer, Rebbetzin Ella asked him why was he there. Rabbi Riskin went on to explain the situation and showed her the area of a question with the chicken. Rabbi Riskin, said Rebbetzin Ella, every chicken looks like that. Okay? Rabbi Riskin expressed how he was always grateful to Rebbetzin Ella because he was then able to go without the embarrassment of having asked Rabbi Aaron such a simple question. And this is absolutely true. If someone brought a chicken to me today, I tell them, go to the Schlachthaus and ask someone a bodek. But wow, what do we know about it today? Now, the story with the cows and injecting them, so Ira Bigel sent me a link to a movie. When I saw the movie, I got frightened. It seems that cows, when they accumulate gas, they're bloated, and you have to get the gas out. So there, they puncture, mamish, make a hole in the cow to get the gas out, because otherwise they suffer. There's pain within the cow. And I saw this on the movie. It's amazing what's available. I know there's pornography and bad things available, but I don't know. My internet only shows, I guess because I'm only asking, I only see good things. That's all I can say. So after this is done, they go on living their lives as usual. And that's the shiloh with the treifa. And that's in Israel. And I think they solved the problem that they puncture the cow with a much smaller hole. They do it lower down where they don't hit an organ. And more or less from what I was told and remember years ago, that here that problem we do not have. Now, my Talmud, Steve Gross, wrote to me, the version I heard about Reb Shechta is that he does not consume milk or dairy in America because after the cows are used for several years as milk producers, they are slaughtered for meat, and a very high percentage are found to be treifot. It's not reasonable to say they all became treifot after their usage as milk producers. All right, this may explain the Peshel, and this may explain the Shiloh. We'll come back to it in a few minutes. I also want to mention one more thing, which is very fascinating, and I wish we had a Chabadnik. I would give this to him. It seems that one of the earliest letters of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, they found the letter in the Gemara of the Rocket Shafa. And it was later published in Igdot HaKodesh. I have everything here. If anyone wants it, you're welcome to it. And they corresponded on the very shaila of something treif, can it heal and become kosher again? And there was correspondence between them. And as I said in class, for the Rocket Shafa, and the Rebbe, it was a mutual admiration society. In other words, they were on a certain level of memory that they knew Kala Torah Kula. And what's fascinating, that the Rebbe signs off on this letter as Mark Gur Ayeh, which is not the Rebbe's name. The Rebbe is Menachem Mendel Schneerson, and here it's signed Mark Gurayeh, and the Talmud who sent it to me, Reb Lebel Feinland, who's evidently a Chabad Shaluach, he explained to me that in order to, he checked with the librarian of 770, Rabbi Levine, who's a tremendous Talmud Chacham as well, and he confirmed it, that they wanted to avoid censorship. And the Rebbe was worried that since the name Schneerson was too well known to the KGB and the censorship department, he used the name Mark Uraye. Now, who is this Mark Uraye? He was a chassid who was very close to the sixth Rebbe. He died young. Sixth Rebbe was makarif him, he died young, so that there were documents about him, about his birth, and they used it further. It was not only the Rebbe, but when his brother emigrated to Israel, he too, this is, could you imagine what survives? This is the Lubavitcher Rebbe's brother, his Department of Immigration to Government of Palestine, and he too gives his name, 1942, Mark Gur Ayeh, not his real Hebrew name. So it's fascinating, but there's an interesting shaila, which may or may not have contemporary implications, where you find something and it heals. And what's the halacha? And here is correspondence. Excuse me. They don't have the entire correspondence, but this letter was found in the Ragat Shavas Gemara. Okay, now I want to come pick up where we left off. We're dealing with Mishnah Halachot, Chelik Tet Zayin, Siman Zayin. And how did this question came up? It comes up in the United States. He's dealing with the American situation. We're dealing with a tshuva from 20 years ago. The Shaila is asked by someone who's related to Reb Menashe Klein. It's from the Hungarian rabbinical family, and he calls them She'er Besari, my own relative. And evidently, the question of Treifat, they're finding a higher percentage when they slaughter Behemoth. And this perhaps is why the question came up. And all of us understand, if you have 1,000 animals, there has to be a certain amount of treifat among them. Like human beings, you can have 1,000 human beings, and depending on the age bracket, some are more healthy than the others. This is, it's, you know, I always tell my wife, she gets upset, why are we sick, why do we have the weather? Said, like a car, you buy a car, two people can buy the same car, and one, it lasts 10 years, the other one, 15 years. This breaks, that breaks. The human being is not much different in that respect. So if the human being is like that, Allah have come and become of the cattle. And this is what Rav Menashe Klein said, we have a concept, acharei rabim lahatot. Okay. Acharei rabim lahatot. And we are obligated, again, this is what I said a half hour ago, Torah has to be given within a human basis. You can't expect a human being to be an angel. He can't, you know, it's like I always would tell the story, it's today, I still get shilas, Yantif Sheni, so, but when I was teaching up a storm in Michlala, Foreign Students Program, Machon Gold, BMT, Midrashit Maria, the Kailel, so always, what do? Yantif Sheni. So I always would say, imagine two girls decide, why do we want to ask Rabbis Abeman, Rakefet, who are they? We'll go to Rabbi Kivega's grave and ask him and tell him, knock once if it's one day and knock twice if it's 2 days. So everyone laughs, but I made a very strong point. Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmul Bedoro. Ein ledayin ele mashe nevrawat, b'chol da v'shoftav, rabbanav, machanchav. We can't be angels. I can't live in the year 2024 And there's Shilas of Rabbi Akiva, Halacha Lamai. So the Rav gave a whole drasha, which he quoted Rav Kook. Everyone quotes the Rav on this because it's the one time he quoted Rav Kook. And he went on the Vidui, on Yom Kippur, Achshav Shenatzati Eini Kedai. And the whole thing, and that God created me in this world. And Rav Kook said, we all have a mission. If we had been created 200 years earlier, we wouldn't succeed. The fact that he created us for here now, we can succeed. But don't become arrogant. And you can succeed, and all right, there's a lot of truth to this. As I've said a million times over, what made BMT was they had Rebbeim who knew Shas and Paiskim, and some of them also knew baseball, and underlined the word baseball. So, all right, we're created at a certain time. So we have to follow Acharei Rabim Lahatad. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Rav Menashe Klein goes so far as to indicate it's like a mitzvah taseh. You must Acharei Rabim Lahatad. All right. Now, Acharei Rabim Lahatad. So here you come to a delicate shaila. I'll give you all the sources this week, next week, you'll see. It comes to life. But I want to give an introduction so you know what we're talking about. We have three pieces of meat, three pieces of steak. I enjoy in all the Alonim and in Jerusalem Post reading these reviews. And my wife says, what are you reading for? You don't eat meat. You don't go out. We don't go out. What did I say? I enjoy reading about all this beautiful food and it's kosher. And the Post is suffering. They used to always have one treif, one kosher. The last few months, it's all kosher. And they admit, because of the French, so many high-class restaurants, one kosher, they interviewed the owners. They say, no, we didn't become Balei Tshuva, but we want to make money. You can't make money if you're not kosher today. And some say we have to be glatt kosher. The French is fathom, they're matan on glatt. And some of them say, boy, I found a new life. I am free on Shabbos. I don't suffer. I have a day off. Halavai chayim. It should lead them to Shmirat Shabbat kedat v'kedem. All right. So you have two pieces of meat and one piece. And you know it's 2-1. And this is Yavesh B'Yavesh. We're me'ika hadin, you don't need shishim. You follow when it's liquid, it's mixed. So there, maybe you need shishim, they're right there. Maybe it's only the rabban. Yavesh b'yavesh, anyone requiring shishim is only the rabban, the oraita. And many still paskin, vik sits down, two pieces of meat, glatt kosher, and one piece. That's, he knows for sure it's not, he doesn't know which one. So, you see, here there's a very basic machloket of the greatest Rishonim. We're talking the Rush and the Rashba. According to the Rush, there's no more treif meat. If the Torah tells you you can eat it, all three pieces are permissible. Lachatchila. Vic, hard to digest. But that's the Rush. See, the Torah tells you, you have a shaila, how do I solve it? Acharei rabim lahatot. And just as the Torah tells you, you can't eat treif, like kalef tashlichen oto, but when it's mixed up, 2-1, could even be 2-1.9. You follow me? Norm, 2-1.9. It's no treif. You eat it. Sleep well at night. It's the Rush. I'll give you all the sources. We'll get there. The Rashba, well, it's treif. But you're allowed to eat it. It's batel. You follow? But it's still treif. So, the Mainaf Kemina, it's very simple. If someone says, how can I eat it? I know something is treif. Vic, do you know who Vic's uncle was? Rabbi Yisrael Snow, one of the most famous Rosh Yeshiva in Chaim Berlin when it still was a multilithic institution. All right? So, how can I eat it? If you go like the Rashba, fine, you're a good Jew. If you go like the Rush, you are rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, brutus, depraved, about, surreptitious, malevolent, pushtak, oishvaf, apikardish. Follow? And Natan, am I entertaining you or am I right? Absolutely right. Chaim, bring the proof. My shir on Eruvin. Remember years ago, I spent how many years on Eruvin? The Rush went crazy. A Talmud said, this thing of Tzirat HaPetach, how can you turn a Rashut HaRabim into a Rashut HaYochid? I can't accept it. The Rush maledicted him. Your Kaifa, the Torah Shabbat. Chatam Seifer. Correspondence with a Talmud. Boy, he let that Talmud have it. This is halacha. So you see, it's a basic machloket here. How do you view it, I would say, hashkafic-wise, philosophic-wise, theologically-wise, and most important, emotionally. Vic said to me last week, Rebbe, I was taught that as a little kid, three pieces of meat, two kosher, one treif, you can eat it. How can you eat all three? It's a whole machlokes thing. But this is the thinking behind it. It's deep. It's not simple. According to the Rush, if the Torah says, Acharei Rabim Lahatot, Acharei Rabim Lahatot, it's mutter, 100%. Okay. That's also part of the discussion. Let me go a step further, because what's touched upon in this tshuva, you could spend an entire year on the areas that Reb Menashe Klein touches, and I'll give you sources of that give you sources that simply index all the literature available. And there is a lot of literature because this is contemporary Torah in our Western world. How do we do? How do we paskin? How do we give hechsher? Now, there's another factor involved. Let me just pause for 1 minute. Chaim, I never completed what I was trying to tell you the other day. I wasn't boasting that I suddenly became a rich man through the apartment. Correct. What I was saying, if I would tell you the whole story, what I bought that apartment for, how I got it back in 69, how I had sex. But what I'm trying to tell you is the minute you think of Aliyah, the first thing to do is buy an apartment. Doesn't matter where. You can rent it out, but there's no better investment because there are going to be another 2 million Jews coming in here in the next few years. Need apartments. I wound up in the center. Every decision I made back in 69, I didn't make it. The Ribbono Shel Olam was leading me. I'm like Yomo. Yomo says, I make no decisions. The Ribbono Shel Olam leads me. On that level, I was total the Ribbono Shel Olam. Where I'm at today, I can faint. I didn't have money for food. The fourth Shabbos of the month, it was everything taxed away. Wow. And it's crazy. You don't know how many people we get messages in our mailbox. We'd love to buy an apartment in this building. We will pay top dollar. So where am I going to live? I got to be near the Gris. They pay me top dollar. What am I going to do with the dollar? One guy came to the building. And you don't know, my whole building is becoming a ghost building because people die. No one sells the apartment. Everyone holds on to it. The grandchildren, they come once a month to go to the hotel. You can't run a building, 16 apartments already, five are empty. But one man rented, there's one guy rents out, he now rented out the whole thing to a Flatbush family, and he says to me, I'll give anything to buy an apartment in this building. He loved the building, the neighbors, Minyan Motzai Shabbos. All right, he's right. So I told him, look, there's this rabbi in Florida, I don't want to give more details. He owns an apartment, it's his parents' apartment. I said, call him, he's not well, he's not going to come back to visit. The guy calls him in Florida, he says, I was told you own an apartment of Berlin 18. I said, so what? I'd like to buy it with a good dollar. You want to buy it? He slams down the phone on him. Yeah, the grandchildren, Baruch Hashem. Okay, so that completes what I started to tell you. I'm not crazy, big deal. I've said in class, anyone who owns an apartment in Jerusalem today is a millionaire. It's beyond words. I look at Torah tidbits, what they have there for sale. I can't believe what I see. Katamon, the end of the world today. It's the height of the world. Baruch Hashem. Now, there's another problem. And this too is widely, widely discussed in the halacha. Tell me, we know that they're tafas. Just like human beings have illness, have growths, need operations. So we know there's tafas. Why don't we check? How can you drink milk? And, all right, if milk is mixed together from 1,000 animals, you're sure there has to be tafas in there. One animal, mainly, you can say it's part of the rove. But the way they make milk today, they collect it and it's pasteurized. And maybe 1,000 different farms are represented in the container of milk that you buy. Why don't we check? There's tafas. So you see, here there's another halakhic concept. Miyatanika. And miyat she'ena nika. If it's a miyat that, all right, comes up 1 in 100, that's life. We can't go out of our way to worry about it. If it's miyat hanika, you have to worry about it. What is miyat hanika, miyat she'ena nika? So you should know that. What is the Yo-Yu Paskin? You can go all the way up to 49% and say it's as long as it's not above 49%, it's not a minika. The general trend, and they're all different opinions right down the line, the general trend is 10%. Up to 10% it's miyat she'enanika. Above 10% it's miyat hanika. The OU, have you ever dealt with meat, with these shilas? But the OU keeps out of shlachtos. Do they really have a shlachtos? I don't think so.
They do.
They have.
Together with others, yeah.
Because I know that they wouldn't take over national kosher, that's what it's called. Hebrew National, they wouldn't take it over because they didn't have enough glatt. They wouldn't have enough glatt meat to take it over, because their hechsher would have to be glatt. So, all right. Anyway, but Amir, now, how does this reflect itself? Very simple. And this too, remember I quoted to the Gemara, Eila Trefet and Chulin. Why are we only bodek the lungs? There are at least 18 other parts of the animal, according to the Mishnah, etc., that also could have treifat. So, here too, it seems that in the other parts of the animal, it's a miyat she'ena nika. When it comes to the lungs, it's a miyat hanika. There's another side to this, which also is quite powerful, and you see it in the Achronim, that to be boidek all the different parts of the animal would be a tircha. It'd be impossible. You couldn't have kosher animals. You'd slaughter an animal and take 2 days to check everything. The lungs, which for sure is a mir panika, is the easiest to check. Because there, it's right there, and you can check, and then the Hoshail of Sirkas. But you see, this too enters into the picture. And when you talk about milk, is it a miyatanika? Is it a miyachainanika? What percentage of animals are treif? And this too figures very prominently. If they're more treif than ever today, as I understand now that this is Rav Heschel Shechter's Chshash, then you have to be baidek. How can you take milk from a treif animal? How can the and you'll see the whole Gemara. There's a much bigger shaila with taking milk. Eva min achai. How do you take milk out of a living animal that's eva min achai? If you broke off the animal's hand and would eat it, you're over one of the most basic isurim, one of the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach, perhaps. Eva min achai. And here you're taking milk, you're taking eggs. All right. How do you buy that? You know. Mi'etanika, mi'cheinanika, what is the percentage? Can it be up to 49%? Now, this shaila of 49% has other ramifications, and I alluded to this too in class over the years. When I came back from Russia in 1981, January, so when you come back from Russia, you're overwhelmed, you're shaking, you're not yourself. What can I do? What can I do? What can I do to help? So I helped organize Shvatami, a spiritual center of Russia. We once had a yeshiva in the center of Yerushalayim where if I wanted to get encouragement, I'd walk in and there are 50 students learning Shas and Paiskim in Russian. And I would give me chias, give me life. So to run an institution like this and to have a koilel and that we published, you have no idea what we did. Now it's all over, it's history. It's not needed anymore. The Russians can take care of themselves and the Russians know where they stand. And Kanayin Hara, we have, it must be tens of thousands of Balei Tshuva from the former communist dump. I just met one last night at Marav, they introduced me to the grandson of a medical doctor came in Aliyah from Canada. I taught his son, I taught his daughter, and this was his grandson-in-law. Tall, handsome, Talmud Chacham, Yerusha Mayim, raised in Russia. Klabiyot came in Aliyah here as a kid, Kanayin Hara. So people raised money. People would take a percentage. As I told you, I could never take a percentage. It's not that I didn't need it, not that I didn't put time in, but it's stuck among. But I had a friend, he took 20%. He said he needs it, okay. So the vote went out that they asked Rav Elyashiv, these Mishulachim come to America. I don't have to tell you, it's not just America, it's America, Canada, England, Australia, South Africa. Sunday, it's a very hard day to be home because they're always knocking on your door and have a whole system. It's like an intelligence organization. People make a living with names where to take you. There's a driver. And what percentage do they keep? So they said, Rav Elyashiv said up to 49% you're allowed to keep. And his thinking is very simple, that if you wouldn't collect, the institution would have nothing. But since you're collecting for the institution, and it has to be the majority. Majority, 51%. 49 you can keep. It's exactly, there's a shita like that at a mere chain, and Iker is up to 49%. Beyond 49%, it's a mere tanika. You follow? So, but logically it would seem to be a lot less. And I believe I've read that the big bodies that give hashgacha go with 10%. It's based upon a Mishkanot Yaakov. There's a whole Litvish tradition. Okay. So this is another area that comes up in discussion here. There's a third area that we've alluded to many times over the decades. I was visiting the United States. You got to remember, for 40 years, or maybe even a little more, I visited America at least once, twice, or three times a year. I worked very hard. I gave shiurim, spoke at many functions. All right, I did good things. I don't want to say I regret it. It took a lot of energy, but I did good things, and I was a source of comfort for my many students, and they were a source of inspiration for me. So I remember in the 70s, I'm sitting in a home, I'll tell you, in Kew Gardens Hills, I'll tell you whose home, Dr. Ari Teitelbaum, iWorld. I'm going to see him a week, this Thursday. This Thursday I have an appointment with Ari. My eyes, my driving license, you have to, at a certain age here, you have to go to, I have my doctor already filled out the form, now I have to go to Ari, but I want my eyes checked as well. So in Ari's home, he's my student, his wife Zahav is my student, his mother was mad at me, Zichron Levracha, I brought them an Aliyah, then I lived to see the day she said, Rav Aaron, the greatest thing you did in your life was to bring my children an Aliyah. Quote, end quote. So, Baruch Hashem. So he shows me a video in Lakewood, they're checking the, I still remember the lesson, be Magid Edus, that you see, he's looking with a microscope, I couldn't believe. So thank God I have a healthy chush of Torah. It's not my own, it's because I was Zeicha L'Sharet G'dolei 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 Yisrael. I have a healthy chush. I immediately said, this is not Torah. I got back to Israel. Before I know it, my daughter is my middle daughter, my wife is an artist, and my children, at least two of my three daughters, inherited that ability. Many of my grandchildren, first-rate artists, etc. She has a light table that I bought her for her calligraphy work, making ketuvot. They're coming in Hanov to her house to look at the letters on her light table. All right, see, lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharet. How far can you go? Here, what can I tell you? Rabbi Schlesser is from Atlanta. You just had a big loss there, Joe Fisher's son. I can't, well. Joe Fisher, I remember from the yeshivas, one of the Rav's top talmidim, the mid-50s, let's say. So, and he died suddenly. I heard he was a Magid. He gave a daf yomi. Yeah. What was his name? Yossi? What was the name? The father's Yossi. Yossi. All right, Beseda. I wish I could get hold of that Malach HaMavet and just choke him. I'd be a much happier man. So, excuse me.
There won't be children in the world.
There won't be children in the world. We'll talk about that later. Let's keep here. So, you see, Lonita, here, Norm Schlesser's going back to Atlanta. He wants to be popular with the whole crowd. And he proposes we'll have an X-ray machine for every cow before we milk the cow. Yomo told me the strawberry store of Devil Yashiv. So Yomel tells me it took him 5 minutes that he was giving hashgacha with this, with that, and they washed these strawberries once in a solution. After cutting, and then they washed them twice, and then they washed them a third time, and some little green things surfaced.
But after the third time, the bugs came out, and they came out on the cloth.
Yomel, I will...
Tiny,
and your eye could see it.
Yes.
Big Shiloh in my mind, whether you're right or Rebel Yashiv was right. Lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharet. This is the way, Rebel. Okay, but you see, this is a problem if we don't use pesticides, and we have more bugs than ever. And I have to tell you, Chaim, please go back and tell everyone in Lakewood that there's one big advantage to living in Israel, Gush Katif. You don't know the lettuce, Shabbos. I make the salad in the morning, and I never saw such clean, beautiful lettuce. I danced the kazatska of joy. All I had to do, I washed it off. Even that, it's beautiful. What they have achieved, the only time I have found a fly in the lettuce is in the packing. That's they come in. That's the one problem. So when they're packing it, a fly can get in and you don't see it. See, because that they don't have control over yet. They may find a solution. But I have to tell you, what an advantage we have, Gush Katif. Now, with the little green peppers, they're clean. You barely find seeds. The whole Shiloh of Shabbos How do you clean a clean? You know how much has been written on this? Rav Regensburg had a big tshuva that we have no choice, that God only meant you can't separate the psul when you can do it in a way that, but with a green pepper you have no solution. Today there's a solution. I clean a green, these little peppers, the drop down. So you take off a drop of the pepper with it. You follow, not just the psul. I have a way of doing it that, but it's an Israeli invention. You got to give credit here to what's going on. But we always have to live with one basic klal, lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharei. And I have to tell you, this is not easy at times. It's not easy. I can tell you the conversation, Rabbi Dr. David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, my dear David, and Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. Rabbi Aaron was ill and this and that. You have to eat Yom Kippur. He has a nurse, Kama Goyish nurse, and feed him intravenously on Yom Kippur. So David says to him, Rebbe, what you're doing goes against everything you taught us. And Rabbi Aaron says to him, David, you're right, but what can I do? Sisfot Yom Kippur. You follow, this captures the whole dilemma. The Rav, Moriu Rebbe, he had a nurse give him injections on, feed him intravenously when he knew it was Yom Kippur. There were later years already where he didn't know. Lo aleinu, vasvetzma mensh. We've got to be humble because we're only human beings. But see, this is a delicate question that comes up. You'll see next week, I'll give you the source, where intelligent people proposed we have to have x-ray machines x-raying every cow before we milk the cow. Okay, this is another problem. And then we come back to the problem that exists today. And you have to understand, Chaim Soloveitchik hit the nail on the head, my classmate, rabbi, doctor, professor, what do you call him? Hagrach, Hagon Reb Chaim. And you have to know Chaim in his prime. No one raised anyone in America as learned as Chaim. Not Reb Aaron, not Reb Moshe, not Reb Yaakov. Soloveitchik head, you understand? And all right, then Professor Jacob Katz captured him. I knew Professor Yak. I used to get Birchat Kanum from him every Shabbos. We daven together at the same minyan. A little man, a little short guy. You think a wind would blow him over. He was bucking in Kol HaTorah Kula. Amazing, just amazing how much one little guy knew. But then he was in academia, and his, if you want to understand Reb Yaakov Katz and Chaim Soloveitchik, all you have to do is study Goy Shel Shabbos. That's Reb Yaakov Katz's famous work, combining halacha and academia, and then you go to Chaim's Yenom, and it's, oh, you'll see, I don't have to tell you what they're capable of. So, but Chaim, eruption, reconstruction. You see, we think we're frummer than all the earlier generations. Tell me, are you allowed to be machmir in front of your Rebbe? Look into Hilchat Talmud Torah. Look, there's responsive literature on this. If you have a chumrah, for the sake of argument, you don't use an automatic elevator on Shabbos. An automatic elevator has problems. My building, we have a heksha on the elevator today. It's the third difference since 69. We've changed the whole system. It's the third system we're using. And now we have a heksha. We must have a heksha in the elevator. People who rent out that apartment, I tell them, you see how frum, you can go back to America and tell them where I rented an apartment in 18 Berlin, the elevator has to have a heksha. So, all right, you don't use the automatic elevator. And here you are standing in the Plaza Hotel And your Rebbe is going up YU as an apartment, I think, on the 22nd floor or something. Top floor. A luxury apartment. And your Rebbe's using the elevator. Are you allowed to say, Rebbe, I don't go in there? Keep your mouth shut, idiots. Your Rebbe. It's open Gemara's act. And this becomes a very big problem. When this is what Rabbi Yashiv intuitively was reacting to, I'll give it the Talmudic expression, Merchzei Ki Yehuda. You look like a show-off. You're frumer than your Rebbe? You're frumer than the generations that came before you? And this is something I remember with Rabbi Moshe David Tendler was a whole shaila broke out about tuna fish. Do you remember it or not? What was the shaila? That evidently the tuna fish is packed. They don't check if it comes from the proper fish, if tuna with fins and scales. And this was in the 80s. This was 80s. This was in the 60s. A whole shaila. So I was then a Rebbe in YU and in Washington Heights, teaching on the same floor as Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. So I went over, Rebbe, I said to him, what's with tuna? And Rabbi Aaron says to me, Thus can ich seine Scheile, mein Kater hat gegessen tuna. He says, it can't be a Scheile, my father Rabbi Meisher ate tuna fish. You follow? And that's a proper attitude. And I learned that at an early age. I told you the story over the decades. I was walking in the hall, and there's a Karen Zovit, how do you say that, a cul-de-sac where you don't see each other. And I'm coming down one side, and kids are coming up, and I hear one Talmud talking to another. Can you eat, Drake's then was under Rabbi Raubach, can you eat Drake's cake? And here they could say, Rav Rotkoff, my Rebbe eats it. If he can eat it, I can eat it. But he's right. He's right. If the Rebbe eats it, you can eat it. If the Rebbe's machmir, then you can be machmir. The Rebbe may kill this. And you see, this question comes up. I gather from the story, and it shook all of Jerusalem, that Rav Elyashiv was offended, that his wife puts out strawberries, and this Schnick Yingle goes to the window and he's holding up the strawberry. And Ravel said, what's he doing? Mama horse, what's going on here? And I can understand with that. That's the impression we got, that when Rav Shachter asked him, he looked at Rav Heschel as if he stepped off the moon. What kind of shayla is that? My father drank milk. Your father drank milk. Everyone ate eggs. What's the shayla? So you see, this too is part of the issue. Now, I just want to show you an interesting source, then I'll come into the tshuva. This is volume, I photographed the cover, it's a beautiful cover. 70 Conversations in Transit with Hagaon HaRav Joseph B. Soloveitchik, it's all by Aaron Adler. And it's a very, very nice volume. There are, I wish you would have consulted me on some historical issues, like Mr. Gross, the relationship, but it's an absolutely accurate volume. How can I tell you that? Because the way Reb Aaron portrays the Rav, what the Rav answers his questions, these are exactly answers I received in the 1950s, mamish word by word. So I said, gee, this is the Rav, because everyone writes about the Rav. They pull him right, they pull him left, and the Rav was a complex person. It's not so simple. As a guy named Rakefet described him, and the editor of Ami danced around Rakefet. I just wrote this to someone who corresponded with me. He was a brisker in the Western world. But the Rav had brisk within him, with all that implies, and he had the Western world within him, with all that implies. So anyway, on the 61st conversation, these are conversations again. Chaim, are you familiar with this volume? Okay, so he drove the Rav around. There have been a number of books written, a number of articles written, people who drove the Rav and the conversations they had with the Rav. So conversation 61, this means a lot to me, I'll tell you why. He writes, after my engagement to Miriam Halberstadt in the winter of 1975. Now, Miriam Halberstadt, I taught women for 31 years. The first class I taught was in Machon Gold, 1971. I had 31 students. One of them was Miriam Halberstadt. So I know her from day one. And by the way, when I hit 31 years of teaching and had to make decisions what to do, I said, that's it. 31 years of teaching, first class at 31. I gave up all my collegiate teaching, only the Kollel. And I had to write then. I was writing Washington, and Washington was the hardest book for me to write because I didn't want to put in any Rechilas or Lashon Hara. People write memoirs, they take revenge against the people who wronged them. And I told you, I got a very big compliment. The Talmud said, Rebbe, you wrote over 400 pages and there's not one negative comment. I said, look, I could be negative. And there are people who hurt me, etc. But you're writing a memoir. God saved you, spared you, enabled you to live to write the memoir. Write positive. So he gets engaged to Miriam Halberstadt. And Miriam Halberstadt hails from Frankfurt, Germany. When he says Halberstadt, the Rav thought he was saying Halberstam. So the Rav asks him, from the sons of a family? Thought it was from Rav Chaim Halberstadt, the Halberstam, the sons of a Rav. No, he said Halberstadt, Yekes. And the Yekes had different halachic practice. One of them was that they waited only 3 hours between milk and meat. Now, his father, his grandparents, Adler, Gershon Adler, migrated to Berlin between the wars, the interbellum period, and they adopted the three-hour concept. And now he's marrying a girl who also has the three-hour concept. And should he go on with 3 hours? Or should he go back to the original family concept in Galicia, 6 hours? That's before his grandfather moved to Berlin in the interbellum period. So the Rav tells him, you have no obligation to return to the stricter six-hour view, and you can continue with the more lenient three-hour view to which you grew up in and your collar grew up in. You can keep with it. And then he says, but Rebbe, maybe I should be machmir. In other words, maybe there's something worth being machmir here. And the Rav quipped, quote, are you looking for a chumrah? I can only tell you that there are only two areas where the chumrah approach is advisable. What are the two areas? Engaging in lashon hara and the area of giving charity, tzedaka. One should be particularly strict in these two areas throughout one's lifetime. In other areas of Torah, it would be okay to take the lenient path. So this is a good story which indicates, you know, you come along, let's say to Yehuda, I'm frummer than the previous generation. We overtake our parents. We're on a higher level. And this problem haunts us in this generation. A good deal of it is that we've lost the living example. And that's Chaim's rupture and reconstruction. When I see giving out before Pesach, the matzah has to be this big. You put it on the table. There's the whole shaila. How can you measure matzah? How can you use a ruler on yontif? Mekach memkem exei the rabbanan a right lishen mitzvah. But it troubles me. How much mora? How much lettuce? On the other hand, I can understand it. These people had no father, had no grandfather, had no one to look up to. they have to take rupture and reconstruction. And that's Rav Teitz's Vart, which is a Meridic Vart. Remember, I quoted it in the Monday class. I remember growing up in this Vart. Rav Teitz said, when I reached America, you went into a home, you saw Svarim, you knew for sure that these were the Svarim of the grandfather. Today, you go into a home and you see Svarim, you can be pretty sure these are the Svarim of the grandson. And that's a good Vart, a good Vart. And that was Lubavitch too. They started, one of their big campaigns was a Jewish library in every home, that the basic Svarim have to be there. All right, now, so we saw that Reb Menashe Klein, Acharei Rabim Lahatot, it's a miut, She'ena Nika, how many treif animals are there? And it's certainly Batel, there certainly is a rove against that, and he says, even Chai Treifot, that is something much more tangible, but we don't check it, we're Samach on the rove, and if that's the case, Alachat Kama Bakama eggs and milk, we can be Samach on the rove. And then he adds on, and this is what I referred to before, Elachas v'chalila, Chisaron emuna betorat Hashem she'emra acharei rabin lahatot v'hi mitzvah mi-mitzvot ha-Torah. And that's a very sharp statement. It echoes the Chatam Sofer, it echoes the Russian relation to Tzirat HaPetach, that this is the Torah. You have to accept it in totality. Torah has to be given in a human context, the human configuration. Acharei rabim lahatot, and you have very right to eat eggs and drink milk. Okay. Now, then he goes on, and people tell him that it could be that this question of treifot coming up so often in animals is interdependent on location. Now, what does this mean? That it could be that different locations, weather factors, and he quotes here at Shuvat of the Rivash, that what you feed the animal, all this that can contribute to the animals having more problems with treifot. But he says, even allowing for this, it's never more than a suffix, it never goes beyond 49%, and he quotes Tshuvot, where there were times where there were high percentages of treifot, but nevertheless, halacha lemaisa, we are samach on the rove, acharei rabim lahatot. And I have to say, in the literature, the secondary literature that cites all the sources, see, they make another point, which again, I would need a veterinarian to tell me whether it's right or wrong, and they make these points where they've consulted academic literature, that the younger an animal is, the less treifot the animal has. The older the animal gets, the more treifot. When do they shech the animals? When they're older. When the animal can produce milk, they're busy taking the milk from it. So it could very well be that if you find in the Batei Shechita the percentage of treifot goes up and up, that's because they're older animals. But it wouldn't affect the shaila when the animals are young. When the animals are young, you have much less a percentage. And this is what I told you. This was the rub, which, you know, at that age and that level of knowledge, we didn't totally understand. When the Rav, the Shaila came up, and I remember my generation already, we were rupture and reconstruction because we had in our class, I would say 40% of the class were survivors, children of survivors. But the rest were children of Rabbanim. So we had that conflict, ruption, reconstruction. And I remember someone yelled out or said to the Rav, Galat Kosher, as if Galat Kosher was better than regular kosher. And the Rav barked back at him, Galat Kosher, Galat Treif. And the class looked at the Rav, and then he explained himself. He said in his slaughterhouse, I don't remember the exact figures, but let's say in his slaughterhouse was 25-26% of the animals were treif. And Galat Kosher, only 22%. He said, they're overlooking something suspicious here. I can't be 27% and they're 22%. So David Goldis, it's a fascinating moment in time, but there was the rub with that whole question, can we be frumer than the earlier generation? I can remember when the first issue of Bugs came out, it was Rav David Feldman, I believe, of Manchester, from London. He published a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, a nice, beautiful, edited edition, and he put in pictures in his Kitzur. Then he had a second volume on Shimusha Shel Torah, I think it was called. I own it. It's a beautiful volume. Part of it, he shows how you have to check letters. And his time, he said, you wash it off and you hold it up to the light. And he shows holding it up to the window to get the light in. Because in England, it was much more primitive than America. If you know about England, it's not the same. I don't know today, but I've been in England in the 80s, the 90s. Not the same amount of hot water, not the same amount of heat during the winter. Far from a New England standard. And so he shows you have to hold it up to the window. But he wrote about bugs, and he said he was at this kosher retreat, the hotel, and he said he offered, I forget how much it was, like 10 pence to anyone who found the bug on the letter. So that inspired them to check it very well. But all right, this, yes, Einach Inami, a sheretz is a sheretz. On the other hand, I again repeat, Gush Katif in Israel, what we have, really we have to be thankful for. The American Agricultural Department, whatever it's called, they sent a whole group of representatives here a few years ago, to see how we grow the lettuce and other vegetables where they have infestation in America and how we don't. And I don't know whether it can be transferred to America or not. You have to have a certain climate and a certain soil. But kala kavod to what goes on here. Now, yes.
About 20 years ago, when I first went to places to check lettuce, on the package, it had a protein content.
Wow.
It was allowable protein content.
Wow. Very frightening. But okay, I, as I've said so many times, Pesach is not Pesach here. The matzah tastes fabulous, the shmura matzah, the lettuce, what used to take an hour in America, takes 5 minutes here, live duck, and I don't know how I'm yotzei with grape juice, is it delicious, but it says with good hakshayim, kosher lePesach, kosher lKiddush, kosher lDalet Kosar. So Baruch Hashem, we're living well. Now, what happened was very simple. This person who wears Rav Menashe Klein, the question, he was not the only one that was bothered by. There was a whole chabur evidently in America, in Israel. I mean, I go back to Vic Snow's elegant comment, how can you eat the 3 pieces of meat? And this leads us into other problems. If you're familiar with the Zohar, Kabbalistic literature, eating tafis it creates tumma in the personality. Matamtum et haben adam.
Timtum
halev. Timtum hasecho. I can understand it very well. And here you have for sure tafis. And you see, this greatly troubled many people. Vic is not the only one. I guarantee you, everyone sitting in this classroom and everyone looking at me at the screen, and we're talking a nice number of people here, it would bother us if we knew for sure we're eating tafis latam, timtum halev. Why? Why do we do it? So you see, they bothered Reb Menashe Klein again. And the second time, he came up with a much longer shuva with many, many more sources. And the introduction I gave you, he deals with everything I mentioned in this shuva. Now, there's an additional gift to us. I'll use the word gift. And I've called your attention to this over the last 20 years since I've been involved with Menashe Klein. He's a chassid at heart. He comes from an area, Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. We'll come in the Monday class, you'll see what goes on there because you're teaching Zohar to Talmidim. When you come into the Kabbalistic literature, to the Hasidic literature, you get involved in a whole new level of understanding. It can't be a litvak to read this tshuva and see what he's involved with. And Hasidic overtones. Everyone has a purpose in this world. Every human. Every baby brought into the world, the more babies, we enhance the road to Mashiach Tzidkenu. Animals, korbanot. And you're going to see Hasidic overtones, which I will ask Yomo to explain. I'll read to you Reb Menashe Klein, I'll read to you Rabbi Dr. David Bleich, quoting the B'nai Yisrascha. Chaim, do I understand it? All I can tell you is if I would read it to Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik, to Rabbi Norich Bornstein, Ribbono Shel Olam, there'd be a hole in the ceiling. By the way, Natan, Professor Shaul Lieberman, I don't think he'd be happy with it. Did you know anything about Shaul? He was kulo ish halacha. He fought with Professor Heschel. They did not get along b'shalom v'shalva in the seminary. And one time when they were honoring from Israel, the big professor of Kabbalah, and what's his name? Who am I talking about? Name escapes me, but it'll come back to me later. I don't want to. Gershon Shalom, exactly, thank you. The honor in Gershon Shalom, so he said in front of everyone, he said, Kabbalah is not real, it has no basis in halacha. I wouldn't waste time on it, but it's nonsense, it's Lieberman speaking, but the history of nonsense is academia. And you have created the history, and Gershon Shalom, I met him, I saw him, and I remember we were davening mincha, it was a wedding. A Talmud Mufak of his was marrying a lady who worked with me in the Judaica. I'm going back to 69. And he went on, he's a big professor at Hebrew U, and she was one step out of Meir Sharim. This is what people who worked with us told us, that her mother, her grandmother, and she already was an academic. But Baruch Hashem, I understand, they remained in their manim letorat Hashem tamima, so I don't want to criticize anything. But at the wedding, we daven mincha, and we're saying kedusha, and I could swear Gershon Shalom didn't know what we were doing. I was shocked. It was 69, my introduction. Okay, now what I'm going to spend next week's shiur on, and it is the same chelik tetzayin, and it's written the same year, 2003, but it's a tshuva much later. Siman Kuf Lamed Zayin. The first one I quoted was Siman Zayin. This one is Kuf Lamed Zayin. Much later. And it's the same Shaila. He says, again, people are contacting me chashu et hachalev bizmanenu, and we find so many treifa today, and even among animals that appear healthy and young. And how do we drink milk? How do we eat cheese if we know for sure that among 60 behemoth, more than 10, could even be as many as 28. And even though we don't milk each cow individually, and all the milk is mixed together from 100 or 1,000 different cows, parat, and it's ruba, you see, all right, the majority, but look what the chash is. And it's not like an individual cow where you can say, all right, it's ruba the lesa, come on. But when you have all this milk mixed together, we know that there has to be tafet. It's within the milk. And how do we drink it? And you tell me that your libo nafko, your conscience bothers you. Your friends, they are all troubled. And maybe there's a solution. What can we do? Can we accomplish something? And let me just end off the first part of the tshuva. And again, we alluded to it in my introduction today. He says, in my entire life, I never met a Jew who didn't drink milk, didn't eat cheese, didn't take eggs, and this is the tradition of all the generations that come before us. And he says, it reflects in the halacha, I'm quoting him, that in relation to a child, tina choleh, and if this child, yeshbo sakana, we milk the cow on Shabbos, we give the kid milk, we do whatever we can. Milk, extremely important for a child. I need not tell you what we have today, how much has been published. Best if the woman milks, gives the child, breastfeeds the child. It's the healthiest situation. Where the mother can't do it properly or doesn't want to do it, we go out of our way, milk, and the milk substitutes the powder to equal the mother's natural milk, what the industries that we have developed. It's crucially important. All we give a child to begin with is milk. Takes months until you start with some solids, with banana, etc. Add a little cereal to the milk, and this is crucial, so important for the child. You see that milk is essential to life, and I can tell you, calcium. What my age already? I walk ibiga bent. I look like I'm. I get on the bus. Old ladies jump up to give me their seats. I'm embarrassed, but. Milk, a bone density test. I just had, I told you, remember I told you, the lady, take off your shirt, this was a Sephardic young lady with her hair covered, and she saw my tzitzit. She danced around me like I'm a tzaddik yisod olam. I gathered from that they thought I'm Mizrach. Many of them don't wear tzitzit. You follow? But wow, I took, what's the big deal? Tzitzit. I wear very light. I can't put on, our grandchildren wear the heavy tzitzit. I can't do it. I apologize. But, wow. And lack of calcium. I take once a month a pill the doctor insists, a rebone, one little pill, once a month. Calcium. Milk, and maybe I didn't drink enough milk when I was young. Now at your old age, what good does it do? All right, it's supposed to help. Vesefisht. And finally, he says something else. Chaim, you know the Torah. The angels visit Avraham Avinu What does he set up for them? What does he make for them? What does he run? Avram Avinu lakach chema v'chalav. V'keina bakar. We have a big problem. He fed them milk and meat together. All right, well, the Rishonim deal with it. Not a big problem. But milk? Cheese? Yoma wants to be frumer than Avram Avinu?
Avram got it from a single cow, and
it's me melamed zchut already that a single cow in a row. But Rabbi Menashe Klein brings this as a proof that from time immemorial, from the veriest earliest history of our people, the Jews drank milk. All right, to be continued next week's shiur. I'm going to show you throwing away one piece of meat, what it's all about. When I learned Yeridaya, Elliot, have you learned Yeridaya yet? You left that to your brother, Zichron Levracha. You left it to your brother. Chaim, do you have smicha? You didn't learn Yeridaya yet. All right, I'm going to give you a key that will help you immensely in Yeridaya and Pesach. Oh, what I want to do, what I want to give you. But all right, I lay the foundation today. Don't forget my story with Julie Mendel. Don't use all your dishes together. By the way, I checked with my daughter. Julie's alive and kicking. His first marriage did not work out. That's sad. But he's remarried and it worked out very well. My daughter and his daughter went to school together, remained very good friends until today. Okay, so what did we do today? First of all, we dedicated in memory of Reb Geshen Edelstein and said a few words about him. And I think I captured him correctly. Because I see all the Alonim and all the weekend newspapers, they're writing about him and trying to understand him. And they portray him as being more liberal than everyone else. It's a result of his life, the way he was brought up. And, the Chazon Ish had the same... You'll see the stories repeat itself with the Chazon Ish, that this kid went off the derech, and should they... something to buy for him, to pay for him... And he'll use the car on Shabbos. And Rav Edelstein said, you buy him the car, don't make any restrictions. And I accept this. I've paskened this way I correctly. Because my nature is kanot. I apologize to you. I told the Talmud, I met with a very important Talmud of mine the other day. I said, I've never been accepted in the mainstream because I'm a kanoi. You follow me? I'm one of the few people who don't denounce me. I got to denounce him. I grew up in Mayer's lap. Do I totally agree with him? Absolutely not. You know my serum. But to denounce him and turn him into the way they describe him, a devil, not the mayor I knew. I don't know. Could be. He made statements. You know, all these public figures, ponim lekan v'ponim lekan. I'm proud to say a Talmud said to me, my closest Talmudim are the ones I taught in the 60s, because they were at an age where they were looking to be influenced. Not today, when you're looking to put a beard on me and pay us and a bekesher, and Vic wants to buy me a shteker, a gold with a gold top, but this Talmud said to me, Rebbe, you haven't changed in 60 plus years. I say that's a compliment. Baruch Hashem, have Divrei Torah, that you've heard my Divrei Torah. Shia Shirim, Mishle Kohelet, I have Divrei Torah. I can't do it now, but you've heard it. These questions are, this is real. This is real. Milk and Reb Heschel Schechter, he doesn't, until today, he doesn't use dairy products. He doesn't, I understand it's a chumrah for himself, not for the world. I don't know how the Rav would feel with it. Could you imagine telling Reb constantly had to drink? Shilas with Rabbi Klavan was ill and was with the end of his life, and he had to take certain pills with milk. And there was at a Sheva Brachas, if I remember correctly, I have it on tape, and he asked the Rav, an hour, Rebbe, can I take the milk now with the pills? An hour. What kind of Shilas? Of course you can. Right away, the Rav told him. And here you see with a child, what, you go out of your way with milk and Avram Avinu, and here you want to be machmir. Okay, so this is the first point he makes, and we will go further next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. Now, are there any questions on this year? Now, tomorrow is, again, very special, and I have a feeling what we're doing is mamish a make mitzvah. I've created so much interest, you can't see all the emails I get, and Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. And I want to create the atmosphere, and I have something to tell you tomorrow, which I tie right in to where I grew up on Arthur Avenue. And it's very, very moving for me, very real. And it's also part of rupture and reconstruction. And I found out this morning that one of the famous Rosh Yeshiva in 770, Rabbi Pekarsky, he too was a Talmud of Chachmei Lublin, but after Rabbi Meir Shapiro. And I'll get to, I hope tomorrow we'll get a little bit already after what happened. Okay. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Fernandi, I want to thank everyone, and I have a class. You make me feel good. You give me succor and encouragement. And I have to thank Yomo. He's very responsible. And he puts up the shiur right after. I'll already have emails to later today on this morning's shiur. Okay, open it up to the world. There's a nice...
Recording stopped.
Right.
So about the whole thing of Akhbar Mahatos, so the whole question is, how come you just say for Torah today? Because most of Rabbeinu gave Shvatim, they all copied. When you copy, you're going to have mistakes.
Yeah, no, okay, it's
so
the same.
So Ezra HaSofer, he took Sefer Torahs, and he went to Akhbar Rabin.
Right.
You know, that's right.
No. So that's the halachic process. Lo nita Torah l'malachei asharet, exactly. And Chabad is jumping with joy because in the manuscript that was just sold, they found the Psuadaka with an Aleph, the way they spell it. So they're jumping for joy. And they're still until today. Some have an Aleph, some have a Hey. No, you're dealing with a very delicate problem. I just want to say to David Vogel, I see you are at home, not on the beach. Because I have one Talmud sitting in front of me from England to Jerusalem, Jerusalem to England, back and forth. He has half family there, half here. It's my Talmud more than 50 years ago.
He was in my class.
He was in your class. So one time he's sitting there, and I see half-naked people running back and forth. I asked him, where are you? He said, you know where I live. He lives right, I live right near the Prime Minister, a half minute away. He lives a half minute from the President. Says the street is always shut down. They demonstrate. I went to Tel Aviv to a hotel. He's on the beach and he's listening. He's learning Torah and they're running back and forth. I said, all right, now I understand. But the challenge is get one of them running back and forth to come learn with you. Then there'll be a shayla, I can't look at the screen. There'll be a woman, you understand? There'll be a whole shayla. Like when I was Masada Kedush in Maplewood. So I always told my Talmud, when I'm Masada Kedush, I look down. I don't look at the collar and at her mother and the grandmother standing there. V'hamevin yavin. Okay, are there any questions from the erudite audience around the world? As I notice on the screen, we're all the way over. Yeah.
This week in the parsha, because what called on the Dido page is really based on this parsha, the difference of Machan and Eid, etc. So I wanted to see, I reread called on the Dido page on the Shabbos. Now there are two translations. One is by Lawrence Kaplan,
right,
which is far, far superior to the one that was published by YU by a fellow called David Gordon.
Dr. Gordon, correct.
Dr. Gordon. Why did they do that? Why didn't they use Kaplan's?
I can only answer you privately. I can't answer you. I know certain things, but it's not for public. I'll answer you privately. Okay?
Okay.
Deal. Yomo, remind me to send to answer Yitzchak.
Really?
The translation is truly better.
No, I understand what you're saying. You got to understand the... Larry Kaplan is an academician, a philosopher. So obviously his translation is going to be better. Dr. Gordon is a fine, wonderful Jew. He's a medical doctor. But he's not on Larry Kaplan's philosophic level. But why you did what it did, I'll talk with you privately. Okay? Leave it at that. Not everything I know can I say. I don't want to wind up in Cheirim like Rav Nelson Kamenetsky. You follow? Everything you said is correct, but some things you have to minimize, in the, particularly the worlds you're talking to. I could say what Nussan said, no one has put me in Chayrim, because I'm not in that world. But here, there's a reason why I'm doing the right thing.
Okay, I accept that.
Okay.
There was an official reason given. Well, when it came out, there was some reason they gave, but it wasn't exactly...
Well, I can't know what you're saying. Say it again.
When it came out, a number of people asked when it came out, and they gave an official reason. It wasn't
For what? For Kol
Dovid Dofek?
No, so you know...
So,
one second, Nachum. You know the inside story, of course, where you came from. You got these hills was involved in it.
Yeah.
So, besides that, leave it. Let me answer Rabbi Rubin privately. Leave it to that.
There's just one thing, Rabbi, about the codex, about the Tanakh, that all the manuscripts, like the Aleppo Codex, they all have the Aleph. They have like a few dozen differences between. There's about 20 or so. The only people who do that are the Taimanim. We have the Tanakh, but really, it's not a lot of the,
okay.
Exactly what it says in those. The Rambam said it, but the way we write Hazidu is different. The way we write a few other words.
Okay,
is different.
So one
There's
second.
A list in,
okay, so I'll tell you. I'll give you a source that I've quoted many years ago in my lectures on questions my students have asked. I dealt with this in class many years ago. Did you know Rabbi Mordechai Breuer? Not Rabbi Dr. Mordechai Breuer, but the Mordechai Breuer that I taught with in Michlala. So, character par excellence, genius, like many of the Breuers. We fought, there was a constant battle between us because I don't denounce Meir Kahana, and he considered Meir Kahana via votatuma. You follow? We were best friends. He would get hysterical, the girls davening in the hallway in Michlala. We didn't see it in front. Lola, you know, it's over Frankfurt, blah, 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 blah. I said, Mazech Patlacha. Ashrenu says Achinu, Shenashim mit Palalot. I'll be Malamet Skot. He was worried from that davening will come learning. From the learning will come female rabbis, and we'll be where we're at today. That the Rakefen has to suffer over women should be panim chadashat, because it adds to the simcha. But Rebbetzin Piotrkovsky, doctor, she may be theoretically right. I don't know. I wish I could talk to the Rav, that's all I could say. Anyway, one second. So Mordechai Breuer issued a whole new Tanakh, and he got an honorary doctorate from Hebrew U. He wrote an article. It appeared there was a small publication put out by the religious students at the universities. I think it was called Shmatin, if I'm not mistaken. He wrote an article, how do we know the Torah we read from is correct? I mean, like you're saying, their variant is that. He says, La halacha lemaisa, we have to do what our parents did. This is the Torah we were given. That's the answer. Now, I had this same thing at Bernard Revel Graduate School. Reb Meir Simcha Feldblum, you know, the Rav cried, Ichab Meira, Professor Weiss, had upgechap for me and my Talmud Meir Simcha. The Rav cried. Meir Simcha was a genius, was brilliant. These were wonderful people I knew, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. He was a survivor, you know, lived there, a Telza who wound up in the mountains with the partisans, and I met people who survived. They said to me, we only survived because we followed Rav Meir Simcha. We said, we'll remain if we'll follow Rav Meir Simcha. So he got involved, he published, I'll never forget, a tremendous essay based upon the Rambam and Hilchot Gittin and Mesirakate, Chatimakate, what creates a get, and he went against the way we paskin. So he was asked, and I remember Rabbi Parnas was very upset, and there was an outcry, Rabbi Meir Simcha, the young Rabbi Heschel Shechter was very upset. So they asked him, how do you go against the Psak? He said, it's very simple. What I'm writing is theory, academia. Halacha lemaisa, I have to do like the psak. says, I'm not changing the halacha, but I'm showing them more rishonim held this way, and they didn't know, they didn't see, whatever. That's the only, and there, Professor Breuer, the Rabbi Breuer, was absolutely correct. And that's the way we have to approach it. I can be the biggest scholar in the world, and I can rejoice in showing academia and the differences, and I can interview Sharon Lieberman Mintz, the Rakefetz Talmidah. She became world famous over this codex. Wonderful. Halacha l'maisa, I read the Torah that's in my shul that my grandparents dedicated to the shul. That's the only way we can survive. Lo nit na Torah l'malachesh. Do you know how Tosfos here comes up? Imagine if the Kohanim had a strip naked when they finished the Avoda. How can there be nene mi bigde kahuna? And the answer is lo nit na Torah l'malachesh. And this is underlying to Reb Menashe Klein's tshuva. And we will see next week the world to do. And then when we get to the B'nai Yisachar, I will call upon Yomo to explain it. Are there any more questions? Yes, Chaim.
The Pashkana was in America by Safra Chasson.
The Pashkana, what about it?
That he was in America by Safra Chasson. That was a Pashkana.
Oh, yeah, he kept that kid from.
Yeah,
the Pashkana with the wedding in America, he kept that kid from. That was the Sapmu, that was the Eitz Chaim's great-grandson. And it's not Rabbi Yoyilowilish has no descendants, but it's his great-great-nephew. But he kept the kid from. Believe me, I see guns, and they sent me from 770. They got hold of from guns put on tefillin. It breaks my heart. He put on tefillin. He doesn't put on tefillin every morning. You know who Gans from Vemina stamped? What are we talking about? That's Munkach, Satma. His parents survived with miracles. They became Mizrachistim here. But he shouldn't put on tefillin. That Chabad has to grab him to put on tefillin. I would be a million more times happy if he said to the Chabadnik, like I said, I haven't missed a day in my life of putting on tefillin. By the way, anyone in his family who survived outside of his immediate family, they're all in Kiryat Yoel. They're all in, what do they call it today, Palm Tree. They're all in Palm Tree. They interviewed them, and they said, "No, how do you feel about your cousin, prime minister, or wants to be or will be?" And then we hope he puts on tefillin every morning. All right. My daughter's from at the Kotel. This is long before he became famous. Without any security, davening like a Yodea Sefer, gedavened sein ganzes Leben, his whole life. He knows how to daven. I saw Jerry Seinfeld at the Kotel, davening perfectly. A tragedy for us that his mother married an Ashkenazi. Had she married within the Syrian community, whatever child would have been from. I taught Jerry Seinfeld's first cousins, Tzadikim Yisodei Olam. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. All right, but we look. But all right, he's mocked. At least he was mocked when he married a divorcee. She had out of the get. See, that much was there. He made a Brit, he made a Pidgin Aben. That much was there. I hope the home is kosher. Maybe I'm deceiving myself. I hope the home is kosher. But all right, this is our struggle, how to remain a Torah Jew in the Western world. Whether we like it or not, the Western world, take a look in the parade of the Behemoth, Rav Avadya's great-grandson was marching with them. And he teaches in a frum high school. I have to accept them. Tell me, if there was a parade of Mechallelei Shabbos, you would also march? Of course we have to accept them. What can you do? A person has free choice. I suffer for another reason. I've taught Torah for 63 years. I've had plenty of cases of homosexuals, lesbian. 90% of the time, it had nothing to do with genes you were born with. It had to do with social factors that influenced you. And I can give you examples. I can give you, there was one maneuver, Winiaz, Gafni, Shem Rishon Yerkov. Ran away from Israel. He found there was a tzav to arrest him, and it was before email. The tzav arrived the day. Ran out. Someone informed him. He's in America. I don't think he considers himself Jewish today. So he was a Talmud Chacham and this, that. A serial rapist and seducer of women. So there was, unfortunately, I know the family intimately, what I'm telling you. I suffered. These are my best friends, their daughter, 13, 14-year-old girl, they all became frum, the whole family. So they switched the kids to Ramaz. So they needed a tutor to help this girl catch up. She had never gone to day school before. So they brought in, they asked Rabbi Riskin, he recommended the student of his. He seduced this girl time after time, statutory rape, 13, 14 years old. She confided in her sister 2 years older. Now that sister became my student. It's tzaddikit until today. She's the head of the Orthodox Lesbians. And do you understand how she became a lesbian? You don't need to be a big psychologist. She married another Orthodox. I remember God have mercy, was the New York Times Wedding of the Week about 20 years ago. And I can tell you, they called me with shilas on Shabbos. They're shomrei, shomrei, shomrei. Sickening, but reality. If I could get hold of the Zwiniyahs, I'd arrest them for that too. So you turn a woman, and she's very capable. She became the head of the Orthodox Lesbian. She coined the term they used. Whatever it is, I don't want to repeat it. I know another case where in a whole family of women, he's the only male. Also, winds up, don't ask. He was helped a little, and I don't know if he straightened out entirely. He never remarried. His wife, a tzaddikit yesod olam, she divorced him, and she never told the world why. Everyone's gossiping. She's not good. She's through her mouth. And she was shocked when I told her, I know why you divorced him. She said, he told you? I said, yes. And I remained very close with him, his ex, who remarried beautifully. Tzaddikim. Good people. But I read the literature. See, when I see, I have cases. I had one student who may be, he's taka born that way. I don't know. He happens to be the only student who took out any of my daughters. He took out my eldest daughter. All my students, they married people who had nothing to do with my classroom. And he took out my eldest daughter. And he today, you all know him. He made a career out of being a rabbi, a homo. His partner, pardon me, Chaim, he always used to boast, a Lakewood boy. So I said to him, what does that mean? Lakewooders, they're humans, they have deviants too. Use the word deviant, he goes bananas. No, I've never mainstreamed. I remain very loyal to Torah Hashem. To me, remember the Rav, you can hear it on tape at Moriah. So when he was talking to the Agada, in the week, this is the early 70s, and he said, they talk about same-sex marriage. Got hysterical. Kotvan alav ketuva, the Gemara in Chulin, daf tzadi aleph, got hysterical. So, all right, we have our challenges. Halacha lemaisa, if a homo walks into this classroom, I can't throw him out. I have to sit down, learn. Doesn't mean I justify his actions. Maybe we can influence. Maybe he can be helped. You see, I know people who were helped. All this talk that they can't be helped, they just commit suicide. It's not true. There's just as much suicide on all levels and chayalim. We have our problems. But most important, don't reject anyone. See, that's true. And even with chayalim, and then I told someone in chinuch that I got a lesson in chinuch 70 years ago from Rabbi Leonard Pearl, maybe more than 70 years. And he was one of the Americans who went to Mir, and he later came back, and he had a great influence on me, on my brother, and Leonard Pearl. So he once, we got a kid, I don't want to go into details, he said, a kid that age, you don't make a big issue over a sexual misdemeanor. He said, we don't lose them to Yiddishkeit. Chatatnu arim. That's when I first learned that term. You have to have seichel. Don't lose the kid. The Chazon Ish, when they asked him about throwing a kid out of yeshiva, he said, it's dinei nefashat. You throw a kid out. It's only if the kid is destroying other kids. But otherwise, let that kid. And I told you the story. I end off the story. It frightens me and shocks me and warms my heart all the time. It's a kid in BMT in the 80s, a kid of Russian origins. And BMT goes up to Tzvat after Lag BaOmer. Rabbi Horowitz, originally in the 70s, he took them for Lag BaOmer. Then they saw sites there that were pornographic. And he decided, go up after Lag BaOmer where you're quiet and you control the situation. So and this kid in Tzvat lights a fire on Shabbos, was dead drunk. So thank God he called me in, I still remember, and he asked me what to do. I said, look, it's May, the year's almost over, the kid is of Russian origins, who knows what his background is. Don't throw the kid out. Just talk with him, reprimand him, and tell him you have confidence he's going to mature and grow up. Fast forward years later, I'm in America, and there's a wedding of a Talmud of mine from maybe the last class of BMT, 88, 89. He lives in Beit Shemesh today. I still remember him well. Jeff Moore, wonderful kid, has a jewelry business, and he's a pitcher. He could have been a major league pitcher. He pitched for the Israeli team. And Shabbat, a real frum tzaddik kid, he married a wonderful girl, have a beautiful family, Beit Shemesh. So at their wedding, I read the ketuvah, I had the first two brach, I had to be in America. So I'm sitting there, and this kid with a black hat is staring at me, sitting in the corner. I'm looking at him. Finally, I go over and I say to him, don't I know you? And he goes, in Tzfat, imagine had Rabbi Horowitz thrown him out. And here's the kid, 10 years later, 5 years later, black hat, way beyond the Rebbe in dress, deportment. I told the kid, why didn't you come over to me? He says, I'm ashamed. I said, do you know how happy you would have made me? How happy I am now to see you like this. I only hope the kid is living here. I suffer with my grandchildren, my daughters, my sons-in-law, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. They can't understand how a Torah Jew can remain outside of Israel. Ugh. Gentlemen, Baruch Hashem, ani mo'del HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that all my descendants have this problem. It's a wonderful problem. We have to influence, have to set the example, have to bring everyone home. Till we meet again tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., just Besorah Tova, the Lane of Al-Kol Yisrael. And I have a lot of nachat. I meet students all over for Shavuot. The whole world came in. Wherever I went, people are saying to me, Das Vedanya, Das Vedanya, Das Vedanya. You don't know what it was like then living a dual life and not being able to talk about the real duality, but just to play games. But I did create feeling for Russian Jewry. And that's how Yomo is my assistant today. Because when I met Yomo, all he had to tell me was born in Kiev. That was like giving me a $10,000 bribe. Born in Kiev and you're Jewish and you're a Talmud Chacham or want to be a Talmud Chacham. That you know Rabbi Willig, that's one of his real Rebbeim. Wow. From that moment on, Yomo could do anything he wants and the Rebbe would clap hands. Wow. Ashrei Nisha Sachino. Norm, good to see you back until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidanya. Go to sleep in America. There's Florida. There's Flatbush. Wow.